Welcome to Talk Eastern Europe, a podcast affiliated with the New Eastern Europe magazine. In each episode, we bring information about politics, society, culture, and history of Central and Eastern Europe, featuring a discussion with guest speakers about ongoing issues in the countries of the region, trying to also place them in a broader global context. Talk Eastern Europe is a member of the Europod network. My name is Adam Reichert, and with me is Maciek Makulski, the other co-host of Talk Eastern Europe. Hello, Maciek.
Hello, welcome everybody from rainy and quite murky Warsaw.
It's the beginning of August. We should have hot summer, but yes, unfortunately, the weather at the moment is a little bit here in Kraków as well. It's a little bit rainy and wet, but maybe
good,
the
good to hear in Krakow is equally bad as in Warsaw.
So Maciek, what's on the agenda for our discussion today? I think we have quite a hot topic that was in the news a few weeks ago in the middle of July.
True, Adam. We have rather short interview as for our standards in Talk Eastern Europe, but the topic we want to discuss today is the recent clash between Armenia and Azerbaijan at the borderland of these two countries. And our guest speaker is Mateusz Kubiak, an analyst from Esperis Consulting and the author of the blog about Caucasus region. And here comes important disclaimer or information for our listeners, because I interviewed Mateusz 1 week after the skirmishes started at the borderland, which was in mid-July, on 12th, if I remember correctly. And we recorded the interview 1 week after the clashes started. And now we have, in the beginning of August, so just to inform our listeners that we recorded, we've been still recording this interview in quite a different context than we have today, because situation right now fortunately is more or less stabilized, but I'm not sure how certain we can be about that, because as you said, it was hot issue. I think it was quite a surprise for international community that in the mid of pandemic such things happen on the borderland, and even pandemic didn't stop clashes on this borderland. What is also important, and we talk about it in the interview, but I think it's worth it to mention at least twice, the clashes were not in Nagorno-Karabakh region, which is like a usual, which is a conflict zone,
right?
First of all, and it is the place where we usually have in mind when we talk about difficult relations between Armenia and Azerbaijan. But this time it wasn't in Nagorno-Karabakh. It was about 300 kilometers northward from Nagorno-Karabakh. So it shows that the relations between these two countries are really tough. And of course, this interview is not to explain the whole spectrum of issues between these two countries, not to explain the history of this conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Mateusz rather presents it from as much as possible objective angle. I think he did a good job in the interview. I'm interested in the feedback from our listeners. But to put it maybe in a bit broader context, we can also mention, Adam, that New Eastern Europe has recently published, I think, several articles about these clashes on the borderland. And I think together with this podcast, those who are interested can have a better understanding of this conflict, of these clashes. And just to finish talking about this context, I would say that I'm thinking about that maybe this topic of the history of Nagorno-Karabakh conflict deserves a separate episode in Turkistan Europe.
Yeah, I think you're right, Maciek. I think you're right. Definitely is one of those hot conflicts that is not going away. Maybe we'll have a little more discussion after the interview. But before we start the interview, I just want to mention, because you brought it up, the articles that we had some coverage on New Eastern Europe's website. One of the things we wanted to do was, and it's a very challenging thing to do, is try to provide some perspective from the ground. So we had authors from Azerbaijan and then an author from Armenia, both provide their perspectives. Of course, each has a very strong emotional attachment to their side. As you can imagine, these two countries are basically in a cold state of war, in some senses. So it's very hard to get an objective analysis coming from the region itself, coming from the countries itself. But I think what we managed to do was really show how each side sees the conflict and what was happening as it was happening, because that was also important to document. And we will put the links to the articles, and I'll allow, you know, I just, what we want to do is have the readers at the end of the day draw their own conclusions. We try to bring the information and analysis as best as we can. So we'll put those links in the show notes to the podcast, and you can head over to the New Eastern Europe website to read those articles.
Yeah, this is how we see, let's say, our mission here at Turkistan Europe. And I think all what we can do in honest way. So, Adam, anything else you would like to add before the interview?
Or? No, I think that's it's a good setup for the interview. As you said, Mateusz Kubiak gives a good overview of the situation as it happened. And I don't think anything has really changed. You mentioned that we recorded this a while back, but really nothing has changed since then. So it's very much current. And I think maybe now we'll go into the interview. Mm-hmm.
Joining me now is Mateusz Kubiak, an analyst at Esperis Consulting. He specializes in energy markets, but he is also the author of the blog about the history and the current events in the Caucasus region. Hello, Mateusz. It's great to have you here. Welcome to Turkistan Europe.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me here.
I would like to start our conversation with a description what really happened in the borderland between Armenia and Azerbaijan, because what we know so far is that on July 12th the skirmishes on the borderland has started, and in the past whenever we heard about fights between these two countries, we had in mind the disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh, which remains one of the frozen conflicts in the region. But this time, there is an important difference, in my opinion, since the clashes erupted not in Nagorno-Karabakh, but on the area between the Tavuz province in Azerbaijan and Tavuz province in Armenia. And this area, correct me if I'm wrong, is located about 300 kilometers northward from Nagorno-Karabakh. So the question is, what happened exactly on the borderland and why the clashes erupted in this place?
The clashes between Armenia and Azerbaijan indeed took place not in the Nagorno-Karabakh region and not in the areas surrounding the disputed region, but to the north from that area, exactly as you've mentioned. And we should remember that shootings in that very area are also not something unprecedented. It also happened in the past that the military incidents took place not only on the line of contact in the Karabakh, but also on the, let's say, this ordinary, internationally recognized border between the two countries. But what is new at the moment is that that is the scale of the clashes. There were artillery shootings involved from both sides. There were military drones reported, and as Armenia reported, they were also took down by their forces. And there were many, many killed soldiers and many injured. we cannot be 100% sure about exact numbers, but as far as it was reported, we should assume that there were around 15, 16 killed soldiers, already summing up from both sides, and around several dozens of injured of soldiers and civilians too. So that was a major incident, and it was the biggest. It was the biggest clash since 2016, if we include clashes in Karabakh region. But it is also reported that it was the biggest one since 1994. So since the signing of the ceasefire agreement between Armenia and Azerbaijan, if we only point out to the clashes on the border, not in the Karabakh region. So the situation is quite significant, and yeah, it deserves to be properly analyzed.
And how does it look like now? Are the fights continue?
No, actually the fights with artillery used are over, hopefully, as for now. It is reported since 2 or 3 days, so since 16th, 17th of July, that the situation is relatively calm and stable. There are, of course, some shootings, some incidents, but that's normal, unfortunately, normal situation between those countries. But the heaviest fighting, hopefully, is over as for now. And previously you asked also about the direct reasons for the clashes. Mm-hmm. I would not dare to say who started those shootings. Of course, two sides are presenting the different contradictory versions of what happened, and we don't have enough details to be sure about who is right and who is wrong. But what I could say is that that situation is also maybe viewed in the context of the developments between two countries from the past few months, at least. As of course we remember that that since a change of power in Armenia in 2018, there was some positive atmosphere in the relations between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Of course, remembering that the two countries are in conflict and there is a lot of hatred and so on, but the atmosphere improved. The contacts between two countries has been intensified. There were meetings between the leaders of the two states. There were more and more meetings on the Minsk group, so within this official format of peace process and peace talks between the foreign ministers of the two countries and so on. And there were some small successes, I would say, like joint declaration that it is indeed necessary to prepare the population of the two countries for peace. So agreeing on using direct communication line between the two countries, and also discussions, negotiations on some humanitarian issues like rights of captives, exchange of captives. So these were those small successes, accompanied by the fact that in 2019 there were really a small number of incidents and of killed soldiers on the border. But the situation started to change in the past several months. Mm-hmm. Only in the first half of 2020, there were already, before the latest clashes, there were more killed than during the whole past year. So that is quite significant. And there was also a sharpening of rhetorics from the both sides. Only in May we could observe, I think, several statements summing up from both sides that also involved threats that they are ready to use force to come back to full-scale military operations in the future if needed. So the situation was tense, and even in the beginning of June, Ilham Aliyev, president of Azerbaijan, also quite openly stated that that he's not happy about what peace process brings, and he's not happy about that there is that the only alternative, as it is presented by the mediators, is continuing the peace talks. So he suggested he is also considering military option as a feasible option. So that was there is a wider context of that situation, and we could expect that actually that something will happen. Probably not. No one expected that it will happen so fast and in such violent way. But that is how it was.
Thank you. I think what you have said already was very important. I wanted to ask about this responsibility, like who is more responsible for this current escalation. But as you said, this is very difficult to say at the moment, and also we all always have to remember about this historical context, this context of Nagorno-Karabakh and the tense relations between the two countries. Nevertheless, this is an important thing you mentioned, is that it didn't come from nowhere. So I think we tend to forget that some tensions were there before, as you said, even in early June. So maybe we will wait a little bit with the final analysis of this current escalation once the situation will stabilize a little bit more. But let's maybe talk now about the reaction of the international community. What is your assessment of it? I think Russia was one of the first who reacted, but there was also a voice from the Collective Security Treaty Organization. What about also other countries, other powers?
Yes, I would also point out to the fact that the Russian Federation is the most active player regarding situation between Armenia and Azerbaijan, and it proves that nothing changed in that area, because Russian Federation was also the most active mediator in the past years. What is also important is the position of the Republic of Turkey. They openly stated they are ready to use military efforts to support Azerbaijan. They threatened Armenia. And we have to remember that it's also NATO member, and such statements are not something that should be ignored. But of course, I would be far from stating that indeed Turkey would enter Armenia one day and would support Azerbaijan in a possible full-scale war, because actually I don't find the possibility of full-scale war in the nearest future as viable. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really less probable scenario. But those two players, Russian Federation and Turkey, were the most active. And I think that's really contrasting with the United States staying aside. Of course, European Union also expressed its concern. There were some diplomatic statements, there were calls, but the situation proved who is the most active one regarding Nagorno-Karabakh conflict and who is ready to mediate. What Russia Federation is trying to achieve is, of course, concessions from both sides. That was significant that Russian Federation actually didn't openly support Armenian side, which is an ally to Russia, and Azerbaijan is not. But Russia tried to stay possibly neutral, to mediate, to use its diplomatic links to both countries and to contact them on the very, very same level. So there were bilateral calls between Russia and Armenia, but also between Russia and Azerbaijan. And of course, Russia will stay like that as far as that's possible. So try to play diplomatic games with both countries, try to receive some concessions from them as a reward for informal support, for example, during the peace talks. And ultimately, the best solution, which probably for the Russians, would be deployment of the peace troops in the Nagorno-Karabakh if such situation arises in the future and there will be some major escalation. So like 4 years ago, it was reported about so-called Lavrov plan, and probably that's still an option for Russia for the future.
Was there any official reaction from the Western countries?
As I said, it was quite startling that United States did not involve actively in the in the situation. Of course, there was engagement from the Minsk group. There was engagement from European Union. But that was not on the level we could observe regarding Russia.
I have such thought in mind that one could think that in the time of global pandemic, which concern also the Southern Caucasus as well, the escalation of the conflict should be the last thing to happen. But now we see it was quite a naive type of thinking. Therefore, I would like to ask you, what are your predictions about the near future? What should we expect? Is there still potential for further escalation? Also, I didn't ask you before, and maybe it can be a part of the answer, because you said that heavy fights are over now, but was there any ceasefire, like official ceasefire?
Yeah, actually, there was no official ceasefire, and as formally, the ceasefire from 1994 is still in force, which of course has nothing with reality, but that's how it looks like. And what about my predictions? Logically thinking, we should assume that it will stay like it was in the past few years. So maybe not like in that quite stable and calm period of 18 and 19, but before. So shootings will be reported, there will be clashes, there will be incidents, there will be unfortunately killed on the both sides probably. But that's always or almost always a political decision to escalate the situation that will be coincide with the diplomatic process and peace talks. So the situation probably will get more tense when the sides will be about to meet and talk about the conflict, because that's also highly instrumentalized in the domestic politics in the both countries. So so the authorities are maybe keen to escalate the situation on the border just to show their own people they are not going to give some concessions to the enemy. So logically thinking, it should stay just on that level. So I would not say that planned, but okay, just to some extent planned escalations and not stable situation, but predictable. But of course, there's also some other scenario that there's something which we what we cannot expect, something unexpected happens. Just like this year, we already know that such things like black swans really do happen, and we have to be aware that they might arise in the future. We never know. Just as last week, we've seen unprecedented demonstrations, pro-war rallies in the Baku in Azerbaijan. No one expected that something may happen. that was a spontaneous reaction. Actually, it was also interesting because we could observe something as a mixture of hatred towards Armenians, but also deep dissatisfaction on their own authorities. And there was quite a mixture of both of these emotions. But anyway, we never know what will be the reaction when another clashes take place. It can just get out of control from both sides, and then we will, hopefully not, but we could see in the future also similar situations like in the past few days. And we never know actually whether it will escalate further. Hopefully not, but that's a risky game that both sides are playing. Mm-hmm. But my prediction would be yes, they will be playing that game either in the future as well.
Mm-hmm. So maybe one the last question about this protest in Baku, because it is really interesting, as you said, and like who took place in this protest? Because as far as I know, there were a lot of young people. So, and if it was so, it means that this level of hatred is also high in the younger generation.
Yes, indeed. And that's the biggest, I think that's one of the biggest obstacles to the peace process. That is the young generation, both in Armenia and in Azerbaijan, is being taught since their childhood that they have to hate the enemy on the second side of the border. And that is the biggest problem. And that's why previously I referred to those small successes within the last two years, that because just as experts on the peace processes and peace talks are underlining, that is important to use such a step-by-step strategy and to build joint confidence on the both sides, just with a small steps, and I don't know, establishing some common platforms to share their views, to exchange opinions, to cooperate on the humanitarian issues. Just like in the past few months, there were some talks between Azerbaijan and Armenia on the enabling the international humanitarian help to the Nagorno-Karabakh regarding COVID pandemic, because as an unrecognized state, it cannot be just freely accompanied by the medical assistance from abroad, because then it will be a problem in relations with Azerbaijan, as the territory is formally still a part of Azerbaijan. So there were talks between the two sides on that, and that was really a positive thing, and also I think quite a significant one. But just as also the situation now was used by the Azerbaijani authorities to dismiss Ministry of Foreign Affairs Elmar Mamadiarov and to replace him with Education Minister Ceyhun Bayramov. And as Ilham Aliyev stated, he also criticized the fact that Mamadiarov was involved in talks regarding medical assistance to Nagorno-Karabakh region. Of course, that was just used to dismiss him and to slam him publicly, because there were some signals from the past few months already that Mamadiarov might be dismissed and there are changes in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs ahead. But now, unfortunately, that step-by-step process and those small successes may break down, and that will be the big problem.
Thank you, Mateusz, for this commentary. I hope that in near future we will see the comeback of these positive steps on track, and we will be able to discuss these positive developments. Maybe we should underline them more when they are happening, not only to discuss crisis situations. That's a lesson also for us as a journalist or think tank community. So thank you very much for this commentary, for joining us. I hope that we will meet again at Talk Eastern Europe to discuss maybe Nagorno-Karabakh conflict or relations between Armenia and Azerbaijan in the broader context. So Any last word from you? Would you like to say something in the end?
Let's just hope that I was wrong, and one day the both sides will decide to stop that risky game I referred to of playing the conflict just for some other reasons, too, political reasons. And let's hope that I was wrong with assessment of the young generation, that the hatred towards the second side will reduce in the coming years.
Yeah, and that's a very important conclusion of our talk. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
See you next time.
And that was Maciek's interview with Mateusz Kubiak, an analyst with Asperis Consulting and an author of the blog about the Caucasus region. You can also find Mateusz Kubiak often on the pages of New Eastern Europe. So really great that we invited him to an interview for the podcast. And Maciek, I thought it was really interesting, several things that were brought up during the interview, but looking at not just the relations, the really sour relations between Armenia and Azerbaijan, which I think we'll talk about in a moment, but also the role of external actors or the lack of interest of some external actors, I think was very interesting to hear about. And I'm thinking also about Turkey coming to the aid, at least in the rhetorical sense, of Azerbaijan. Russia more of a mediator role, at least declarative mediator role, during this hot period of July, which is interesting because many thought that Russia might come to the aid of Armenia since Armenia is a member of the CSTO, which is Russian-led defense pact. And then the role of the U.S. really sitting silently and just not really saying much at all, and the European Union as well, just being concerned but not really trying to bring the parties together. I think really, if we look at the conflict, the broader conflict, not just what broke out, as we talked about in the beginning, it wasn't in Nagorno-Karabakh, but it's definitely related to the conflict that exists between Armenia and Azerbaijan over Nagorno-Karabakh. The fact that really Russian Federation probably plays the largest role in terms of engaging with both sides, and we see that the other countries, especially those who are the co-chairs of the OSCE Minsk group, which is the official group that's supposed to be regulating pursuing the peace of the conflict, have really taken kind of a second seat and just allowed Russia to try to take a lead. I think that's interesting for many aspects, but really, if we look at it from the geopolitical side, this conflict showed what players are more interested and what players are not so interested.
Yeah, definitely there is this geopolitical dimension, as you call it. And yeah, you raise very important points, but I would like to also underline one more, and this is quite an important takeaway from the interview for me, but also it is related what you have said in the beginning of this episode, that there are huge emotions on both sides, so this is not just frozen conflict for me. For me, important fact is that this conflict is so important for both societies, but not only for our older generation, but as Mateusz also pointed out, for younger generations. So this is a part of, I don't know, I'm not sure if we can say that, but it's in a way part of the national identities.
Yes.
In both countries, and I think this is probably very challenging factor if we talk about this conflict, because on the one hand we can say that maybe the societies are somehow trapped in in this situation, or politicians are. Yeah, so sometimes we think that maybe politicians use conflicts just to achieve their political goals, and they are pragmatic or cynical in it. But here we have also this another angle, that this is important issue for the societies and which puts pressure also on politicians. Yeah. So it works in this case in both ways.
I think it was very worrying, and you mentioned this, you talked about this in the interview, the protests that broke out in Baku I think that, you know, dozens of thousands of people who came out to the streets demanding that the authorities take the country to war.
Exactly.
And you see that the emotions, as you mentioned, that the politicians use it in a much cynical way, that, you know, this is a way to kind of to raise fear and to influence the society and keeping the authorities in power. But at a certain point, it looks like it could almost get out of control, at least from the Azerbaijani side. I think Armenia could probably make a similar argument. So this is very worrying development to see. And I, from my discussions, and, you know, we deal a lot with people from both countries, and from the analysis that I read, it really seems that the people-to-people ties, social connections between everyday Armenians and Azerbaijanis, even like civil society groups, is really, really little. And that's also something that is, I think, very concerning when you look at these societies are completely isolated from each other, even though they are neighbors and they are in a state of conflict.
Yeah.
So it's really a challenging situation. There are certain factors, many, many factors that are at play, but I think we touched on some key ones in this episode.
Yeah, maybe last thought from me would be to think about, you know, the discourse we use or vocabulary we use, because, you know, we used to repeat that the Nagorno-Karabakh is one of the frozen conflicts in the post-Soviet region. But if we have such severe clashes regularly, in fact, so should we still call it like a frozen conflict? Yeah, maybe there is also an exercise for us to find ourselves in you know, describing this dynamic. And this is also maybe, you know, the role for such organizations, international organization, as you mentioned before, that their work is not sufficient now. Yeah?
Yeah.
And I think kind of, you know, reconfiguration or just rethinking what is the aim, what we want to achieve, and how to brought, you know, stabilization, because peace is like very, very far away from at least for now in this part of the world. Okay, Adam, but just to also end on a positive note, because I would like to recommend good source of knowledge about this Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, but I hope we will do a separate episode on it. But there is a recent movie which is titled Parts of a Circle, and this is done in a way like a dialogue between Azerbaijani and Armenians. Hmm. And it was a cooperation founded from the European Union. Interesting documentary, which tries to explain the complexity of this conflict. Which started at the turn of 1980s and 1990s. So the movie is available online, so we will make sure to put the link in the notes of this episode, and maybe that would be a first step of preparing ourselves also to this episode about Nagorno-Karabakh.
Absolutely. Conflict. Yeah, for those of you out there who are listening, please also share your feedback on our Facebook group. Or on Twitter. We are interested in learning what you think about How well do you know the situation? Do you want us to do a specific podcast? I think, Maciek, it's a really good idea that we look specifically at the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict. It's quite complicated. And as you said, it's not a frozen conflict. It definitely is hotter than frozen. I agree that it's hard to come up with a way to describe it. But, you know, when you have a lot of the powers, big powers who more or less think everything is stable and then kind of, you know, turn away. This is definitely a conflict that could quickly escalate and it's very dangerous. So I think the more we know about it, the better.
Yeah. Okay. So everyone, thank you for listening to this episode, but our episode is not the end yet.
No.
Because as usual, we have some special adverts.
Announcements, that's right.
And announcements for you. So Adam, maybe you can start.
I would like to start by, of course, thanking our patrons, who are the amazing people who support the podcast with their financial contributions. We are really pleased to have you with us. And we are at 25 still. So if you're out there and you have not joined us as a patron, I highly recommend also considering, because the money that we raise helps pay for, as you know, developing the podcast. And allows us to do the kind of things that we can do with Talk Eastern Europe. And there's a lot of benefits for being a patron, including getting some exclusive access to New Eastern Europe, as well as having a meeting with us from time to time. We had our first meeting back in July. Was it July, Maciek? I think it was July.
Yeah, it was July.
So not that long ago, and it was great to get to know some of you, and I hope that others will join. And I, of course, the main benefit that we do every episode is the shout out. So I just wanted to give a special thanks to Pierre, to Stephanie, to Caitlin, Mark, Steve, Jason, Janos, Erica, Elizabeth, David, Wilhelm, Dennis, Sophia, Ian, Urs, Pavel, William, Anastasia, David, Sean, Nina, Elise, Joel, John, and Sylvia. Thank you so much for your support of Talk Eastern Europe.
I have always this question in mind, Adam, that I'm thinking whether you read the names or you remember them already.
I memorized it right before we record, so it's cool. Straight from memory.
Okay, thank you. And don't forget also those who listen us to for a first time or haven't decided yet to join our Facebook group. There is also such opportunity to get in touch with us. This is a place where everyone can put a question to us or recommend some idea for a future episode, so you can find it also in the notes of this episode. And the good news is that recently we have crossed, I think, 700 members of this group.
Yes, yes,
correct me if I'm wrong, Adam.
You're right.
But I think we have already over 700 members. So our Talk Eastern Europe community is growing, which is good news.
Yes, yes. And last announcement for me, Maciek. Second to last. First, I want to just say for all of you who are first-time listeners, welcome. Do check out our previous episodes because we cover a lot of the region of Central and Eastern Europe. There's a ton to cover, but we do our best to try to pick up the hot issues or interesting stories that are taking place at the time. Second thing I want to mention is that New Eastern Europe has just recently released its latest issue, which is focused on hybrid warfare, specifically looking from the case of Georgia. So if you're interested in learning more about hybrid war, how it works from Georgia's perspective, plus we have a lot of other stuff in there as well, do check out our website. We have a, unfortunately, with the COVID pandemic, it's really difficult to distribute this in bookshops and newsstands and airports like we normally do. So we do ask to support us by heading over and purchasing an issue directly from our website for just 10 euros. You get the immediate PDF access, plus we ship you the hard copy. And so far, post office is working quite well despite the pandemic. So take a look at New Eastern Europe. That's it from you, Maciek.
Yeah, as a contribute interesting editor. I must say that I also read PDF version because it's available much quicker even for me.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's it, Adam. Thank you all again for listening us. For those who are in the end in the end of this episode, I hope there are
all the way to the end,
two or three people still there. Yeah, and have a nice rest of the summer. I hope the weather is better in your places, in your cities, or wherever you are during listening this podcast. And yeah, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
See you soon. Yep, bye-bye.